David. So you have been somewhat of a mentor to me, maybe you didn't realize, but for about 4 years. And you have been a great friend to me for that time, someone I can ring up and say I'm lost, or someone I can be curious with. And I have greatly appreciated it. A defining moment for me, and this isn't, I'm not trying to blow smoke, is that when we first met, we met because a mutual connection of ours was hosting a networking event. And after he said, you spoke, and after I was like, can you introduce me to David? And we went for a coffee. We had a chat.
Yeah.
And you were very curious about what we were doing. And I thought to myself, wow, what a compliment that someone like you could have interest in what Chris and I were doing. So that was my experience of first meeting you. So I just wanted to share.
That's very kind. I do remember when we met at that networking thing. And that was the evening Colin, who was our mutual friend, his guest speaker hadn't turned up for whatever reason.
Uh-huh.
And he tapped me on the shoulder and said, guest speaker hasn't turned up. I'm going to introduce you in a minute.
Great.
You do a couple of minutes on Help the Heroes, as it was at that point. I just left. And I thought, surely you're joking. He said, no. And then he turned and he said, ladies and gentlemen, he clapped his hands and then off we went. So that was the event. It sticks very clearly in my mind for that reason, because I then sort of waxed lyrical for 10 minutes or so about, completely off the top of my head, about Help the Heroes. And then, yes, I mean, I remember the coffee in the Brand Exchange, as it was.
Yeah.
And I find it that fascinating what you, Chris, were up to and the things you were engaged in and what you're trying to achieve and all of that. Because I'm always fascinated by what, I suppose there's a natural nosiness, isn't it? I'm always fascinated what other people are up to. And not for any sort of any reason other than curiosity. And I just found that you were both really engaging, really enthusiastic, clearly. Yes. And I think passionate is a hugely overused word, but you were clearly passionate and committed to what you were trying to achieve. And what I liked and continue to like, actually, what you bring to it is the sort of yin and the yang of you and Chris being quite different characters, but also that mesh together, two different characters that work together really well. You bring something different. It's not corporate. You've got an entirely different background. You have an acting background and all that stuff, which just brings a different perspective to the work that you do and to your audiences and your clients. Because I've long believed that, and in the areas I've worked, I've seen this, I've long believed that if you continue to ask the same sorts of people questions, you'll continue to get the same sorts of answers.
Yeah.
And if we keep getting the same sorts of answers, but keep asking questions, and presumably we weren't happy with the set of answers we got the last time. You're still passing the same group of people.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, that different, that sort of diversity of background, diversity of thought, the yin and the yang of the different skills and experiences that you and Chris bring is really powerful. And I was really fascinated by it.
Oh, well, fantastic. Thank you very much. That's great. No, yeah. I sort of firmly believe in the, and it's an obvious thing to say, but the value in diversity of thought. I mean, it's so obvious, but so I agree with what you say. Stop asking the same questions of the same people.
Yeah, and then expecting a different result. Sort of thing. It's it's not that that group of people don't have a valid view, but it's not being leavened or informed by anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there has to be evolution.
Right. Exactly that.
So David, you know, obviously you work now a lot in resilience, and you also have, since leaving the army, you've worked a lot with helping people, specifically ex-military, thrive after leaving the military, which is a very hard transition, I should imagine. What prompted you to, I don't know if dedicate is too strong a word, but dedicate this next chapter of your life, leaving the army to helping ex-service people?
I think it's a couple of things. I've always enjoyed, I mean, from a very personal perspective, I've always taken a huge amount of pleasure in seeing other people succeed and seeing capable, well, but actually it's not just capable people. I mean, everybody is capable to some degree or another. But seeing people sort of get to develop in their own careers and succeed, whatever success means to them, and it means something different to us. And I've always enjoyed that, whether they were people in uniform or not. And then as I sort of left the military, I could see the challenges that such a big cohort of capable, experienced, motivated young men and women have as they come out of a structured environment. Although it's probably not as structured as people who've never been in it think, it is structured the same. And seeing that, and I experienced it to some degree myself, although not as acutely as some, I think, is you go from an organization where there's a very clear sense of identity, there's a very simply a sense of team, it's about team before self and all that kind of good stuff, and a very clear sense of purpose and a unity of purpose about the organization, irrespective of what cap badge you wear or color of uniform you have. This is a singularity, unity of purpose, clarity that is incredibly helpful. And then you see people sort of start with, make the decision to leave, and they step away from all of that. And that can be such a big culture shock. Because, of course, you go into what is arguably a slightly more chaotic environment where it's not so structured. And by structured, I don't mean having everything done for you. I just mean there's a structure to the organization. Your civilian life isn't the same unless you're in an organization, I guess. And you can have that sense of loss of identity and loss of purpose, personal purpose, which can affect your motivation and your focus and make life quite hard. You can get that, generate that sense of wheel spin. You're getting nowhere because you're finding it difficult to belay yourself on. You different connect into things. And I saw that, and I saw it also in the sporting world, where I did still do some work with an organization called Switch the Play, which is helps professional athletes as they retire and move on away from whatever their sport is into something else. They experience the same thing. You know, for very many years, they've been identified, for some of them, especially sports people, they've been identified by what they do rather than who they are. Just for many of them, since they were really little, they've been good at this sport. That's what they are. And then, you know, that culture shock as they leave, that sense of purpose and direction and clarity is lost. And you can become lost through that. So I enjoy just helping people see through that. And I think in so many areas, reminding them, and you are reminding them so often, and are in some cases uncovering for them what their skills and their experiences and their talents and their capabilities really are, how they translate into a civilian workplace or civilian life. I mean, work is only part of you. It's quite a big part of you, inevitably, but it's only part of you.
I think this is a problem which is going to become more and more apparent. Not just, you look at individuals who are defined by their job that they've had, right? Whether it's through military, whether it's through sport, whether it's through my experience in acting, having a changing career is always felt inevitable.
Yeah.
Irrelevant of success, terrifying.
Yeah.
Not because you'd be doing something different, but because what you are is so intrinsically connected with the job that you do. And what's quite interesting, and this is anecdotal, is there anything else? But I have many conversations with people around my age where they are stuck in their jobs and petrified to leave because they are not necessarily defined by being a buyer for a certain company, but they are certainly defined by their salary expectations and the lifestyle that they want to leave, and are too scared to, understandably, I say it with compassion, but too scared to stick their head out the window to see if their skills are transferable elsewhere. And the wonderful thing about so many ex-service people I've met and ex-sports people I've met and actors, where certainly when I was changing career, I had to go, well, what are my skills and where are they valuable and how can they improve other people's lives? Whereas I think if you haven't had that inevitable change, you haven't had to ask yourself that question.
Absolutely. You know, I left, as you know, I left the army under a medical discharge after getting myself shot in Afghanistan, which was careless. And the
I don't think you can take the blame for that.
Maybe my field craft wasn't up to scratch, but anyway. So I sort of left unexpectedly. Well, unexpectedly early in the, taking the long view of things. And so I had to go through that sort of exact question. What am I going to do now? How do I take what I know, what I think I'm good at? And maybe what I think I'm good at and maybe not as good at in reality. But anyway, let's start on the positive. And how do I apply that outside to something that interests me, importantly, and has a sense of purpose? Mm-hmm. You know, why am I doing this? The purpose starts to answer the why, doesn't it? why do I do this, whatever this is? And was it a nerve-wracking time? Yeah, of course it was. But one of the things I think you have to do is you need to understand who the person is when you peel the uniform off, or the running vest, or the suit, whatever it is you do, or the work jacket, who knows? So when you peel it off, who is underneath? Because we all have, to some degree, I think, a sort of a working persona, a work persona. And I think if we're not careful, we can start to believe our own propaganda that the work persona is actually us.
100%.
And to some degree, of course, it's you, but it's part of you. And I think I sort of peeled my uniform off, where people know who you are because it's a uniform. People recognize the uniform. And of course, you've got a badge on the front which tells you where you sit in the organization and all that goes with it. But of course, that's for nothing when you leave. It doesn't count anymore. Mm. And I found it to be really important to spend a bit of time reflecting on who Dave Bridgman was. Mm. And therefore, what I liked and what I didn't like. Mm. What I was motivated by, what I wasn't. The things I felt informed by, the things I felt I was good at and interested in, as opposed to the things which I was less good at and less interested in. And so often those things go hand in hand, good at and interested and not so good at and not it. And that does lead you down the line of, okay, you're not so good at it because you can't be bothered. Well, maybe that's the case, but anyway. And that's a conversation I've had with lots of people since. You are in the same sort of transition situation. And not confusing that with as you describe, salary and lifestyle, and you know, those are sort of consequentials rather than who you are. And I find that, and I find actually when I'm doing sort of maybe some group sessions or interviews and work job interviews, so often people ask what I think is a slightly lily-livered question. They would say, Johnny, you applied for this job. If I asked your three best friends, what would they say? How would they describe you? Well, that's sort of that's putting the question one step removed, and therefore is slightly easier to answer because you can say, well, I don't really know, but how about this? But if I said to you, Johnny, how would you describe you? Who are you?
You know, difficult.
That's a really difficult
question. My heart going like this.
It's the same question, but it's just brought one step closer. It suddenly becomes personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an easy question to answer. Mm. It's a horribly difficult question to answer. But I think it's a much more pertinent one. Who cares what your friends think? Well, who are you?
You think most people can be honest about that?
I think some people can be honest about that. And I think some people wouldn't necessarily be dishonest. They might just not really know because they haven't really thought about it. And sometimes because it's difficult to articulate sometimes, or maybe they don't like the answer, or maybe the answer isn't one that they you know, there's lots of reasons, but it even if you can't articulate it, if it makes you reflect on you, then I think that's a good start.
Yeah, I think it's a good start. Would you expect someone to be able to answer it if you were asking a question in an interview?
I'd expect a slightly stumbly sort of answer. I mean, if somebody answered it too quickly, you'd think, don't believe it.
It's rehearsed.
Yeah, it's too quick. It's like, reminds me when I'm with my daughter in the 20s, you say, you're out last night, was it a date? No. Well, if it happened that quickly, clearly it was a date. Yeah, it's hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah. Hilarious. You know, when you were asking yourself that question, those questions about what gets me out of bed and keeps me out of bed, and why should I do whatever I should do? Was that a difficult time? Was it quick? Did it take a long time?
For me, mm-hmm. It was quite difficult. I think it's quite difficult because it really, really made me think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really had to think about it, but it actually surfaced, I think, over time. And I'll be really honest, you know, I don't think we ever have the whole answer, but there were things that became more apparent to me, the more experienced I became, the older I was, this and all that kind of stuff, the longer I thought about it. You know, I found that, you know, I get my energy for a lot of energy from other people. You know, I like being part of a team with a purpose and a clarity and all that kind of stuff. So I like working with people. I like developing people. I draw a lot of sort of personal satisfaction from that and seeing people succeed. You know, I hold integrity very dear.
Yeah.
I find, and I discovered that when I thought this was going back a few years when I thought, are you questioning my integrity? And I thought, it really got me. I could feel myself sitting up.
Yeah.
And I thought, actually, that's told me something about what motivates me. You know, that's how important integrity is to me. And all that, you know, so that kind of, it was a sort of evolutionary process. I don't think I sat down one day with a pencil and a bit of paper and wrote it out. It was a sort of subliminal sort of intuitive process over time, but started with clearly asking myself the question and then letting things create. But, you know, understanding why certain situations or people irritate.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they irritate? Because there's something that rubs up against what you believe, what you hold dear. And, you know, I think having a military background, I suppose you've subscribed to a set of values for so long.
Mm-hmm.
In an organization which doesn't, it would say itself, doesn't always get it right. Of course it doesn't. But actually is driven by a set of values itself and a purpose and a likeness there. Yeah, that all informs the person that you are. And I think all our experiences inform who we are as we go. And you might change, you know, and it changes you over time. Well, I suspect, you know, you're a different, you would have a different, in some way, not wholly, but in some way, a different set of values, beliefs, or attitudes than perhaps you had before you had children.
Yeah.
Your life events inform you, change you, and you take a different view. You know, when I was wounded and Headley Court, so long. I thought before I went to Headley Court that I knew people pretty well. You know, I was early 41 years old, or two, wherever it was.
It's a good age, David. It's a good age.
Yes. I could still be there. And, you know, I was a commanding officer. And, you know, I'd been around a while and I thought, you know people. You understand how people tick. And I reflect back, I wasn't too far off. But actually, what I discovered at Headley Court was just laid really bare for me was just how differently people are wired, which I don't think I'd fully appreciated before I turned up there. And of course, it's in a very raw environment because it was three people who'd suffered life-changing injuries. What that laid out for me and laid bare for so many was how different people reacted to the adversity of that situation, mm-hmm. and how they coped with it. And they all coped with it in the end. but they coped with it in their own ways. And, and therefore the sort of the nuances and the subtleties of people and teams and were writ large for me then. And I took that away as a sort of really, for me, in terms of my approach to things, the redefining period of time.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah, because it's such a clear example of when people are sort of put up against the wall, right? Where their true selves will come out. And this isn't with any judgment, because everyone's trying to get to A to B, and how you get from A to B is so personal.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And the struggles some people had working out where B was.
Yeah, for
sure. And, or also the struggles, I suppose, to some degree, we all had working out where we were, and what had changed, and what was the impact, and what did that mean? But I think, yeah, one of the things I took away from my military time and that was leadership in when things are going well is easy. Anybody can lead on an easy day.
Yeah,
we can all hold the cup above our head and say, yeah, we won, aren't we all great? Pat ourselves on the back. But your real mettle as a leader, it comes through, whether that's personal leadership, is leading yourself, which you've got to do first, of course, or team leadership, is when times are really tough and people really are looking at you for some direction and some leadership to show them the way. And by which I don't mean somebody just to shout at them and tell them, right, the next hill's over there, but to properly engage them and bring them together and move the whole thing on, whatever the thing is and wherever you want to go. That's really hard when times are tough. And the screen people who take the plaudits of the good days have also to roll the sleeves up and get dirty on the bad days.
Yeah. I mean, leadership isn't about giving the direction.
No.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Interesting, because, you know, I was thinking about purpose and leadership and all of those things. And I was talking to the guys about it at work, and purpose is incredibly important to me. And I had 2 weeks ago, I was lost, completely lost. I thought, God, it's all BS. It's all hot air. Purpose, everything that we sell as a business, that I believe as an individual, it's all nonsense. And it was really difficult. And you know, I sort of wallowed for a day, being incredibly unproductive. And it wasn't until the next day that I realized that exactly what you say. When things are going well, it's very easy to define a purpose and come up with a set of values which you all sort of connect to and clap each other on the back. But it's when things are tough that the purpose carries you, actually, and strengthens you. And that's why it's so important to try and define it, because when you come to the, even though I was blinded from it, it was the purpose which stopped me giving up.
Yeah.
Even though I couldn't connect to it at that time, it carried you through the harder times. And yeah, so I connect to what you're saying personally. You know, it's interesting. Yeah.
And I think you need those. In an ironic way, you need those days of struggling a bit to allow you to have just that reflection, to recognize that actually having the power, it was always there.
Yeah.
Just that there'd been a bank of fog had appeared in front of you.
Yeah.
Or the following morning as it passed on.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody asked me the other day, you know, what's to do with work? And they said, what would you like? What would you like doing? Honestly, I'm pretty open with what I like doing. I'm much more interested in doing it with people I like.
Yeah.
For a cause I believe it, that has a clear purpose.
Yeah.
And those are the three things I left him. And I said, what it might be is much less relevant to me than why.
Yeah.
And am I doing it with a group of people I'm going to enjoy working with? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you play that into a workplace so often, I think things are changing. I mean, I totally believe things are changing, and you can see them changing, but there are still a lot of workplaces which are still very top down directive driven, and nobody's terribly interested in you or how interested you are, the contribution you might need to make beyond your desk. They're just interested in, can you add to that bottom line? Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point of whatever generation you're now, Z or X or whatever it is.
It's not X. We're X, David.
Well, I think I'm more of a sort of, I'm probably in the middle of the alphabet. I get that. That's one. But the current generation, yeah, and all credit to you, will give that the finger and move on.
Yeah.
They're not going to have it. And I think they're dead right. Mm-hmm. Therefore, having a company culture and structure that places a genuine interest in the young people you employ, mm-hmm, and they're not the young people you employ, all the people you employ, has a clear purpose and culture and an interest in developing, rather than all strikes me as a slightly 1980s approach of, well, we pay you good money, therefore we expect hard work. Well, yeah, they will work hard for you, but they also expect to be engaged, to be led, to be developed, to have their views, or ability to have their views expressed and listened to, and maybe acted on if they're good ones. And that's a much more difficult place for leaders to be. And it requires leadership, not management.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the gear change. And I also think that it for me, it sounds like a no-brainer, because it leads a business's resilience, but also a personal resilience as well. Because we are not going to have one job for the rest of our lives. They don't exist. So we need that resilience and that curiosity, and that curiosity to be embraced by their mentors that are leading us.
Yeah. And
we were talking at work. Again, I was sort of monologuing. It was probably a whole load of bananas, but I was talking about how I see leadership in the workplace, about certainly when you employ someone, is that they are lending you their career, and that comes with a responsibility. But if you see that as a responsibility, that lending of you are lending me your career, it means that because I respect that so much, there is a responsibility on you to give me everything that you can. I mean, and I don't mean that like work a million hours a day. I mean, to lend me your values and your curiosity and your passions and your purpose, and because then we can do something incredible.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. And I think that connection that flows through from that is what begins to what was the great word, alignment. It begins to align people, not just in the day-to-day, what are they doing, the what, but also on the why. Mm-hmm. If there's an alignment around the why you're there, how you work, the engagement you have with your organization, how it supports you, how it will develop you, the pathways it can see for you as an individual as well as a team. And actually doesn't just talk about team, but operates as a team. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important, you know, and people often talk about the sort of integration that comes with that. And the horizontal, the sort of vertical integration piece is really easy. They're sort of like silos and stovepipes and all the other ones. But so rarely is the key bit of that horizontal integration, where because you've got people aligned around the why, they can look to their left and their right and see their colleagues and other teams, and you're all looking at the same pollster. And that starts to align, that starts to help people integrate horizontally as well as vertically. And that, I think, is when you've got such, you really do generate a synergy in an organization. And so much of that flows from the purpose. Why are we all here?
Do you think, we have to have one eye on the time, right? So, but do you think that this is a luxury afforded only to
the smaller companies. So you look at big, big multinationals. This challenge I get all the time when I speak to people who work at big multinationals or companies that have floated is that, oh, well, the shareholders don't care about that. It's too competitive for us to do this, to align behind purpose.
I think that is a lazy smokescreen because it's quite hard.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're right. Shareholders, to a large degree, probably don't give much time to purpose. But that's a different audience. And I think if you can have a clarity of purpose in your organization, however big or small it is, given the staff that you have on board, and these big organizations have got a lot of staff, then I think they would reap the benefits of that on their bottom line, which they will say, well, that's what the shareholders are interested in. They're interested in the bottom line, not how we get there. Well, I think it's a slightly simplistic view, and it's also a very lazy one. And I think that view also informs, you know, something I've come across when I've worked in small teams supporting corporates is that's a short term is drives leaders who are further up the hierarchical tree, focus downwards to in effect start doing other people's jobs for them. And that's all they're paid for. That's not why you're there. And if you have often asked this, you say, raise your hand if you like being micromanaged. Well, needless to say, nobody puts their hand up. Then you ask the same group of people, raise your hand if you feel you have been micromanaged, and everybody's hand goes up. Because micromanagement's easy, isn't it? Because actually you probably might, you're doing what you used to do and just telling somebody, and that's what really hacks off younger generations, hacked off generations to be years by. But the younger generation won't put up with it. And if you employ really good people, let them get on with their job, suitably guided and led, and give them some autonomy. Because if you're micromanaging, how does that get interpreted? Well, you don't trust me, do you?
Yeah, of course.
Why don't you trust me to do this? Why are you not delegating any of the responsibilities and decisions? As opposed to delegating just the work.
The same micromanagers are the people who get frustrated that they have to make all the decisions.
Yeah, exactly. And they haven't got any time. Well, you haven't got any time because they're busy doing his job or her job for it.
Yeah.
Create the space that allows you to think about where you're going. Mm-hmm. But in the long term, that'll save you money. It won't cost you money.
Of course. I mean, yeah.
And I don't believe for a minute that these big organizations don't have the resources to do it. Mm-hmm. They're not prepared to put the resources into doing it. Not that they don't have the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they are missing a trick, and I'm missing a very big trick. And I think that they will, the good staff they've got will just go and be good staff somewhere else.
Yeah, of course.
Basically.
Yeah. Yet
the young people won't tolerate it, and neither should they.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, for big, big organizations, I'm not suggesting they're not busy. Everybody's busy. Busy doing what?
Yeah.
If you can't find time to think about your unity of purpose, your purpose, your why are you doing this? How are you going to align? How do you, if you can't generate time to do that, what is more important? And there's a strong element of short-termism, there's been reporting less quarterly profits for the shareholders. Fine, well, that's one thing. That's one aspect of what you do. It might be a big aspect, but it's one aspect. The long-term future of the organization, by and large, relies on the people in it and how efficient and effective they can be and how well-led they are will inform. There are other aspects to have to the long-term future, but that's a key component of it.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that those people who are just thinking about the quarterly profits aren't probably connected themselves to, let alone anybody else, but connected themselves to their individual purpose, and company, the owners haven't identified, they don't know why they're in the business in the first place.
And a bonus culture, which is focused totally on bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line needs to be part of it. Of course it does.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be all of it.
Yeah.
And So he doesn't take that much more. And also we also in the bigger the organization, the more corporate bureaucracy you get wrapped up in, and you lose clarity and the ability to move with any alacrity, I suppose. But that again comes back to where are the leaders.
Mm-hmm. David, thank you so much. I could continue this conversation forever. There are so many questions that I have about this exact point, this part of the conversation we're having. But thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure, as ever. Really enjoyed it.
Great. And let's speak soon. Let's grab a beer. Yeah. More importantly.
Absolutely. We must do that for sure.
All right.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.